Hello, I'm Kimberly Dondo, Digital Content Manager, and welcome to the In Conversation With series, a series where I speak to notable figures in the realm of financial services. Listen as they share their personal journeys, thoughts on the industry, and advice for aspiring advisors. Today, I'm joined by Louisa Todd. So Louisa, could you give us an introduction on yourself just to let the audience know?
Of course I can. Thank you, Kimberly. Thank you for inviting me to join you on this podcast. Hi, everybody. My name's Louisa Todd. I'm one of the directors of Bespoke Training Solutions. We're a company that specialises in regulated exam support. Predominantly, we support the Chartered Insurance Institute Level 4 and now Level 6 exams through lots of different mediums. So study guides, e-learning, remote workshops, app questions. So yes, we support the exam journey for candidates in financial services.
Okay.
I'm 58 years old, 59 next birthday, married, two stepsons, three cats, and a Yorkshire husband who's a fantastic cook. How's that for an introduction, Kimberly?
That's perfect. Honestly, it sounds absolutely amazing. And can I just say that if you hadn't said you're 58, I wouldn't have even thought you were.
So. And everybody, no money has changed hands between Kimberly and I. For her to say, I don't look my age. But thank you very much, Kimberly.
So how did you begin? How did you start your journey in financial services? Because I know that you've been doing bespoke training solutions for a very long time. So what was the beginning of your journey like?
Well, BTS has been going for 19 and a half years, and I can't actually quite believe it's that long. I sort of like look back and I think, really, where's all that time gone? But I was one of these people, Kimberly. I left school at 18 and I didn't really know what I wanted to do with my life.
So I think that's the story of everyone's life.
Yeah, but some people, don't they? They always think, well, I want to be a vet, or I want to be a nurse, or I want to be a doctor. Some people have got a really good idea, and I had absolutely no idea what I wanted to do with the rest of my life. What I did know was that I didn't fancy going to university. Mm. So I actually trained, no laughing, to be a nurse. So I left home, went to London because I thought, oh, that would be exciting living in London. Trained to be a nurse for 4 years, absolutely loved it. But living in London on a nurse's salary, and this was many years ago, I couldn't afford to buy a shed, let alone my own house. And I thought to myself, well, I'm good at organisation. What else could I do? So I then joined Marks and Spencer's as a retail manager, working in food departments, and did that for a few years, and then actually ended up joining a building society as an advisor in one of the branches.
Yeah.
This isn't a short story, by the way.
No, Kimberly. It's an interesting one, though.
So join the building society, working in the branch, talking to customers about their financial planning needs. And we had the retail distribution review. And that introduced the need to have a minimum level 4 qualification. So the building society asked for volunteers to actually do some training. And I thought, that sounds dead interesting. So I volunteered, and that got me into learning and development. And I realized that I absolutely loved it. I've always been a bit of a show-off, I'm afraid, Kimberly, from a very early age. That got me into learning and development. And then eventually I met the other director of BTS, a chap called Jeff Scholes, and we decided to form our own company because we thought we can provide services that are absolutely top quality and really help candidates. So I sort of meandered. I didn't go straight into financial services. I was a nurse, then I was a retail manager, then the building society, and finally setting up my own company.
Yeah.
I think that journey, though, when I said before, that is the story of everyone's life. I do feel like it is a minority who know, like, I want to be a vet, I want to be a doctor, I want to be a lawyer, and they stick to that. The majority of people, even just on this podcast series, everyone's story starts the same way. I had no idea what I wanted to do. Some of them went as far as going to university, but then realizing I don't want to pursue that, or that is not something that I can necessarily pursue. And then that's how they ended up here. But I think a testament is that when you do find something that you love, you stick to it, like BTS and sticking with it for 19 and a half years, you know.
Absolutely. And I completely agree with you. I think sometimes society makes us think, and people ask you, don't they, what do you want? What do you want to do? Yeah. You're 18. What do you want to do with your life? And you think, oh, should I know?
Yeah.
And you, as you quite rightly say, a lot of people really don't have any idea. So they want to try. They try a few different routes. They go to university. They think, well, do you know what? This course isn't for me. I'm not enjoying it. And it's about finding your passion, isn't it? What can you do that is going to do two things? One, gets you paid. And two, that you absolutely love.
Yeah.
And it's taken me a little bit of a windy road to find that with Bespoke Training Solutions. But most days, 99.9% of the days, I get up and I think, great, another day with our candidates, with clients, loving what we do and actually getting paid for it. And there is no better feeling than having that killer combination. So I do count myself as incredibly, incredibly fortunate to actually run BTS with Jeff and the team and to support our candidates, who are, again, 99.999% of them are adorable. We get the occasional tiny, tiny odd person that we think, oh yeah, you're not really for us.
Yeah.
But we are very, very lucky in the job that we do and the people that we support.
Yeah. No, I think also maybe, yeah, the path was a bit windy, but I think the skills that you picked up along that path from, you know, nursing and working in a building society and being a manager at Marks & Spencer, probably all of those have kind of tied in to put you in the position that you're in now.
100%, because as a nurse, you've got to be, you've obviously got to have academic ability up to a certain level, and financial services, you have to have a degree of academic ability. But far more important is your people skills.
Yes.
How do you get on with people? How do you talk to them? Do they like you? Do they trust you? And I think as a nurse, working with patients, working with other healthcare professionals, working in Marks & Spencer's with the general public, which of course was a joy, Kimberly, obviously. You absolutely hone those skills that you then take to financial services and learning and development. Because if a client doesn't like you, or if a candidate doesn't like you and they don't trust you, they're not going to use you.
Yeah. So when so what is the process for someone, let's say, use me as an example, I come to you and I want to use your services, how does one approach that, and what is the process going through for the training and everything?
Well, we get that a lot. So the amount of calls we get, emails, and they generally start off the same way. A lot of it is from people that actually are changing careers.
Right.
So they've not left school and thought, oh, yes, I want to be in financial services. They've gone and done, you know, a few different jobs, perhaps marketing. We get a lot of sports people. So cricketers, footballers that have had a successful career. And obviously, a footballer, a cricketer, your age is a big factor to how long you can have that career. We get a lot of them approaching us and saying, oh, you know, we've heard really good things about you. We've seen you on social media. What's the process? And we always start by talking them through what BTS offer. And we offer a four-stage approach, and it's a step approach. So study, train, e-learn, and practice. Right. And we talk them through that approach. But not everybody, Kimberly, will need all four stages.
Right.
Because actually, you could be dandy with just the study and the practice. So our study guide, and we have an app called RO Study Buddy. So you might use those two and absolutely not need anything else. Mm-hmm. Whereas somebody else might need a bit more, a little bit extra. So they might need our e-learning. They might need to attend one of our remote workshops. But we always talk them through what we offer. We talk them through the exams and how they work. Because people, especially those new to financial services, you'll be amazed, Kimberly, at what they don't know. They don't know how to book an exam. They don't know, and why should they? They don't know what's the best order to sit the exams in. Do you sit them in? Do you start at number one, because there are six units? Do you start at number one and go 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6?
Or is it you think?
Yeah, well, you would. But actually, that's not what you do. We do 1, 5, 3, 2, 4, and 6. How is that for an order that you'd never have with yourself?
Yeah, no, I mean, I would never, I would just assume that whatever order they've numbered them in is what they want me to do. But I mean, if, like, for example, some of the tests are complementary or like overlapping,
that's right,
then that's probably why you have actually ordered them the way you have.
Exactly, because there are a lot of individuals out there that are trying to get into a company and get that company to then sponsor them through the rest of their exams. Mm-hmm. And most companies would want the individual to have already got number one and number five. So that tends to be the minimum criteria for a company to take you on. So it's logical then that, that you'd start with those two. But then, as you quite rightly say, some of the other units, because you've got six units in the CII level four, some of the other units, it makes sense to do them in a certain order because there's crossover. So unit number three is tax, unit number two is investments, and it's 100% common sense to do one after the other because you need your tax for your investments.
Right.
And then you need you do pensions, which is number four, and for pensions, you need your tax and you need your investments. But if you're new to financial services, you're not going to know that. Yeah. You're not going to know, how do I sit my exam? How do I book my exam? What order should I sit those units in? What material should I be using? What choices have I got? We're very much, as a company, about service and about talking people and both individuals and companies that come to us. Because, of course, companies are sometimes just as much in need of our guidance as an individual that rings up. So we talk them through our step process. We talk them through a good order to sit the exams in, and then we listen to them and work through any other questions that they've got for us.
Yeah, no, that makes complete sense. Kind of going on to like the materials and stuff like that, I have noticed from some news stories that have come on our website and also just general interest from our audience, there has been a lot of complaints with the CII and certain, materials not being sent out on time, or, delays and just general issues. Has that also been something that's affected your candidates, or have you found a way to circumvent that so it's not something that affects them?
We don't personally have many issues with our materials. So for example, if you order one of our study guides, generally it's with you the next day.
Wow.
So I don't really understand how sometimes it can take 2 to 3 weeks for an examining body study guide to actually get to the candidate. I find that a little bit of a mystery. I do understand, though, some of the issues that candidates have been having with the actual exam system.
Yeah.
Because the CII use a company called PSI, which I think are an American-based company, because all the exams are done via the computer. So they are computer-based exams. And I've got a huge amount of sympathy for the CII, I have to be honest, Kimberly.
It's a big body. It's a lot of things that they have to juggle, I can imagine.
But it's not that. What are you like on modern technology? How would you rate yourself on a scale of 1 to 10?
As a millennial, I'm a native, so I think I pick stuff up quite quickly because I've basically grown with the technology.
Okay, well, I'm a baby boomer, and I would say on a scale of 1 to 10, before the pandemic, I was a 1. I hadn't even heard of Zoom or Teams, let alone be able to use them.
Yeah.
And when you sit an electronic exam, the CII are relying on the candidate having checked their system and checked that their system is compatible with the PSI browser. They're also, depending on the candidate, to have looked through the guidance so they know what to expect. But if you rock up to an electronic exam, you've checked nothing, you have not had a practice, well, to be frank, you're going to get what you deserve, which is your system might not work, you might have delays, and it's going to be a horrible experience. So in all fairness to the examining body, I do think some of the problems are the person sitting in the chair, rather than the actual computer system. Now, sometimes you can have done all the checks, all the practice, and the system is just pants. So absolutely, there have been quite a few issues, with the system, especially to start with. But it's not all down to the examining body. No. Some of it is absolutely the person. I mean, we see it because, Kimberly, we have got an app that you download, and you're a millennial. You download an app, obviously, from the App Store or from Google Play. Yeah, and it's an app. And how many questions we have about our app. Yeah, how to use it.
Oh, God.
Kimberly, we send out invoices, for workshops that we run, and we have emails and telephone calls about how do I pay that invoice? And sort of like you're sat at the other end of the phone and you're thinking, really? Yeah, so how about a BACS payment or PayPal? Well, how do I set up BTS? As a payment on PayPal. So I really do have some sympathy.
Yeah.
But companies are relying on the technological capability and preparation of the person.
Right.
And sometimes that's not very good and they're not very, well prepared. And then it can go horribly wrong. But there have been issues, absolutely. To start with, when they first introduced the PSI system, crumbs, we had lots of candidate issues in the first 6 months. But I'm a great believer in fairness. It's not just the CII's fault. You've also got to look at that candidate. Did they prepare? Did they check their system? And if the answer to those two questions is no, then some of the responsibility has to sit with them.
Yeah, that's a fair point. If you don't, sometimes, if you don't look at your emails and, read, you have to follow these steps to make sure that you're ready on that day. And you just assume it's going to be fine and easy. I'm someone who personally, especially when it comes to exams or something like that, I get nervous and anxious. So I'm always there, like, if it's an in-person thing, I'm like an hour early just sitting. But if it's a technology thing, and it's something that I haven't used before, I test it out beforehand.
Absolutely.
It's possible.
It's common sense, isn't it?
Yeah. I guess for some people, maybe they don't think it should be that difficult because so many other people have used it. I'm not quite sure, you know, or some people, you know, they like to be handheld through processes, you know, and bless you know, unfortunately, that's not possible all the time, especially, you know, in something that, especially going into financial advice, I feel like you have to be independent to a certain extent.
You have to show some initiative. You can't just rely totally on somebody to handhold you through that process. Mm-hmm. If you go on the CII website, they have got so much information. They've got videos, they have got demos about how their examination system works. I was reading a post, it was either today or yesterday, Kimberly, on LinkedIn, about one of the advanced exams, and the candidate hadn't actually realized that the exam had started. So they'd sat there for 7-8 minutes and nothing was happening, and they didn't actually realize because nobody had said go.
But
what I would say to that candidate is, and I wrote an article on it for Professional Paraplanner, if you'd gone onto the system and read the preparation, you will have realized that on the advanced exams, there is no live proctor. Mm. Yeah. So it's recorded, and that recording is viewed after the exam. There is nobody sat there. You're just being filmed. So there's nobody there to say, go, Kimberly, go. Once you've gone through all the checks, you just get on with it.
Yeah.
So it's sometimes I think there's a little bit of six of one, half a dozen of another. I purposely, and our designers at BTS, sit all the exams every year.
Okay.
And not just from a let's keep our technical knowledge up perspective, but also to use the systems.
Yeah.
I sat because we generally support the CII exams, but I had a go at another provider's exams, a provider called the CISI. Have you heard of them?
Yes.
So I sat one of their exams remotely just to sort of like see, well, what's the standard like and what's the invigilation process like? And I did have a giggle, Kimberly. One of the things they asked me to do, and there was a live proctor, before I could start the exams, what do you think of this? I had to take my earrings off.
What could your earrings? Oh, could they be a secret earpiece?
Yes, you know. So look at my earrings. They could be a secret microphone to somebody that knows a lot about the exam. Or, you know, could I have written something or put any post-it? I did giggle at that. It was like, that's really funny. Yeah. And I haven't got any pods in my ears. Earrings are sort of like fairly standard fare for a lady. Yeah. Or for anybody, actually. Yeah. It did make me chuckle. First time I've ever sat an exam, somebody has said, oh, you'll have to take your earrings off. It's just like, really? It made me chuckle. It really did.
That makes me wonder, though, for them to have put that in place, because usually these things are put in place because someone did something. That makes me wonder what that person used their earrings for them to have to put this rule in place.
I know, but that's a huge stretch of the imagination for what you could use your earrings for to help you in an exam. It's really, really strange, isn't it?
It's so strange.
It is really weird. So that was my most surreal exam experience. Take your earrings off or you can't carry on with the exam. Oh, okay. Yeah, fine. But yeah, so going back to our point, it's about preparation. Don't turn up to a remote exam unless you've read all the info available, you've had a go at the live demos. Because a point you made as well, Kimberly, you are going to be nervous. Mm. This is an exam situation. And if you've got system issues, that's going to make those nerves even worse. It's going to exacerbate them. Now, there are some situations where it's not absolutely not the candidate's fault. They could have prepped, they could have checked their system, and they still have a really bad day. in their exam. And that's not acceptable. I don't think that's acceptable 2 years, 2.5, 3 years on after the pandemic. So they do still have issues. But as I say, being totally fair, it's have you done the prep? Did you know what to expect? Did you check your system? The answer to all of those questions is yes, yes, yes. Then absolutely, you've got every right to go to the examining body and say, you let me down here.
Yeah.
That shouldn't have happened. What are you going to do about it? And again, in fairness, they absolutely want to help. Everybody that I speak to at the CII in exams, if you get to the right person, they are fantastic. Yeah, mm-hmm. They want to help. They want to put it right. Mm-hmm. But they're like any organization. We all have issues sometimes, don't we?
Yeah, especially when technology is involved.
Oh, technology is, you can bet your bottom dollar. When you want technology to work, it's like it knows it's you, Kimberly. And it thinks, right, Kimberly, love, I'm not going to work today because I know. Yeah,
you need this.
Exactly. I was running a webinar for the R06 exam and we had 150 candidates joining the webinar. So just like you, I'm a great one for preparation. So I dialed in early and my Zoom wouldn't work at all, nothing. And it was like, you know it's me, don't you? You know I need you. You've just decided you're not going to work. So thankfully, I rang Jeff, the other director, sent him my slides. His Zoom was working perfectly.
So he was awesome.
He put some smart clothes on because we had cameras on that. And he did it. But technology is, it's like it's personal sometimes, Kimberly.
I know. I understand that feeling. So for someone who's kind of coming into training and stuff, how long would you say a person should expect for them to kind of get through from R01 to R06,
That's a great question, and it's my favorite answer.
Yeah.
It depends. Did you know I was going to say that?
Yeah, I assumed, but I thought maybe you could give like a rough like outline from like the shortest amount of time to the longest amount of time, you know?
Yeah, so if you're a full-time student, and that's all you're doing, then you can absolutely, with a bit of a wing and a prayer behind you, you could do all six units in 3 to 4 months.
Okay.
Yeah. But that is a full-time student. And at BTS have supported academies where for the first few months, all they do is the exams. Mm-hmm. So they're absolutely head down, focused. Yeah. R01, then R05, then R03, and that's all they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
But most people are working at the same time. And you know what it's like after you've done a day's work, Kimberly, and it's you get to your study and you pick up R01 regulation.
Yeah.
What's your brain going to be like trying to learn about the FCA handbook and COBS and ICOBS? I mean, I can already see, the lights on, nobody at home looking at you. It's so somebody working full time, at least a year, probably closer to 18 to 24 months. Because there's only so much you can do after you've done a day's work.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, that makes sense. I mean, when I was studying for my master's, which is slightly different, I was working alongside it, but I made sure that I did the full time so I could complete it in the shortest amount of time. Mm-hmm. But there were times when it was really difficult to juggle, you know, I didn't have to study for my master's, but I had to write dissertations and write essays and different research modules. And It took up the whole year. I had no other free time. And I can only imagine if I'd, had a family and I had children to also look after, that would just make the situation even more heightened.
Exactly. So not only do you have a job, but actually you've got life.
Yeah.
You've got family and you've got the right to actually have a bit of a good time. At least once a week. So somebody in that position, I'd say 18 to 24 months.
Yeah.
The other thing to consider is even if you are a full-time student, there's only a certain amount of studying your brain can actually take.
That's true.
In one go. I couldn't imagine anything worse from my own learning perspective of being sat at my desk thinking, right, I'm going to spend the next 8 hours learning about the FCA handbook. Yeah, because I'm off today. I don't think so.
Yeah.
You know, an hour, do something else. Yeah, perhaps another hour, do something else. You quite rightly said different mediums. Mix it up a bit. Yeah, so I do a bit of reading here. Then I'm going to do a little test on the app here. Right, then I'll listen to that audio here. So it's, otherwise it's a real slog because some of the subjects are not the most exciting.
Yeah. No, I can imagine.
I find them exciting. Don't get me wrong.
Well, you've been retesting for 19 and a half years, so I assume you'd find them quite interesting.
I mean,
I wonder, because you've done the test so much, do you pick up on things that they've changed? And you're like, oh, last year it was this, and now they've changed it to this, you know?
Oh, the question banks are quite big.
Uh-huh.
I can absolutely see, because things change with tax years.
Mm-hmm.
But to pick up on sort of like slight changes in their approach, that's quite difficult because I'm sitting 50 or 100 questions and that question bank might actually have 2,000 to 3,000. Wow. Questions in them. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that's quite difficult in practice. But some of the subjects, and I was just about to say pensions, my all-time favorite subject.
Wow.
But to most students, to most candidates, you just have to say the word pensions and it's just like, really? Yeah, that sounds so boring.
I know, but I feel like I talk to a lot of financial advisors who seem to specialize in pensions. Oh, so, brilliant. You know, it seems, you know, eventually they do take it up and find it the most interesting.
I think that's probably because it's one of the subjects that consumers find the most difficult.
Yeah, because they don't think about it until it's
because they don't understand it, because it's so complicated and it's got so many different rules
and
the paperwork, and it changes all the time. And the paperwork that you get from companies because of regulation, you get so many different pieces of paper that consumers with pensions need all the help going. So that's probably got something to do with the fact that a lot of advisors, pensions is their speciality, because it's the most difficult for the consumer to actually understand.
That makes sense. More people would likely be seeking advice for that because they don't have the expertise for it.
Well, my husband was recently, and he's still actually going through it, was looking at transferring a pension from one company scheme to his own pension.
Right.
And honestly, Kimberly, the paperwork that he got through, I was looking at it in the car where we were driving somewhere, and I was getting quite excited because I was thinking, oh, there's some GMP, there's some, you know, post-97 benefits. And he's looking at this paperwork thinking, I've got no idea what any of this means. And without me being sat there saying, oh, this is what this means.
Yeah.
This is what, he'd be completely lost. And that is your average consumer. And your average consumer doesn't have Louisa Todd, who absolutely loves pensions and who has pretty much every single pensions exam going. They don't have Louisa Todd sat next to them in the car. More's the pity, Kimberly. More's the pity.
I'm sure he was thinking I'm the luckiest man in the world.
I'm not
right
sure
now.
He was. Yeah, but I'll tell him that, Kimberly. I'll say, you are the luckiest man.
yeah. It's free advice as well. You're giving.
I know. Well, mind you, I can't give advice. I'm giving him
free guidance.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yes, I think he's the luckiest man as well, Kimberly. So thank you.
So to wrap up, I really enjoyed this conversation, but what would your advice be to someone who, you know, you said you have a lot of second careerists kind of approaching you, and what would your advice be to those people who are looking into starting to get those qualifications and take those exams? And what would you tell those people?
Well, I tell them, first of all, that financial services is an amazing industry to be in.
Mm.
So if you're thinking about changing careers, it's fascinating. People are fascinating. Yet what we talk to our clients about is so interesting.
Yeah.
So financial services is a brilliant career path. You can get a lot of job satisfaction and make a very decent living. Thank you very much. That's the first thing I'd say to them. Just do it, as Nike say. Second thing I would say is talk to people. Mm-hmm. You will be amazed at how many people there are out there on LinkedIn, on Facebook. Not that I'm on Facebook. But there's so many people that actually will give up their time for nothing to talk to you and to help you make a decision on which route you want to go, what sort of area in financial service, because it doesn't have to be financial planning. Yet paraplanning is a career in its own right, financial administration. But look for people to talk to, reach out on social media. And my last top tip, research your options. Do not assume that there is only one source of exam materials for you. You have to sit the exam through the examining body, but there are a variety of different providers of support materials, BTS being one of them, that you can use. So find something that works for you, that suits your learning style, that you enjoy using. Don't just go straight for the CII and order their full package. Shop around first. Mm-hmm. Now, it might be the full package absolutely suits you and that's what you want, but it might not be.
Yeah.
Sorry, Kimberly, there were quite a few top tips there.
No, there were. That's I'm sure everyone listening will be absorbing that as someone who has had such experience in this. You know, those are very relevant tips. And I think valuable to anyone who's looking into, you know, really pursuing this. But thank you so much for speaking with me today, Louisa. I really enjoyed it.
Thank you, Kimberly. Have we not got another half an hour that we can chew the cud over?
We'll do another next time. We'll do a part two.
Thanks very much, Kimberly.
Thank you for listening to In Conversation With. We do hope that you enjoyed it. Please do keep up to date with all our new releases via Podbean, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and everywhere else you get your podcasts from. You can also keep up to date with all our new content published on the Money Marketing website, as well as our print edition Money Marketing magazine. So make sure to subscribe. Follow us on Twitter, LinkedIn, Facebook, and Instagram. See you next time.